Good morning, I'm Chris Oaks, and coming up today, data centers and housing issues continue to be on the minds of city leaders. Findlay Mayor Christina Murn joins us to further discuss these hot-button community issues. Also this morning in our community and business spotlight, as our population continues to age, Taylor Place Assisted Living is committed to providing for the ongoing health care needs of their residents. And we'll get an update on the latest programs and activities from the Findlay Family YMCA. Stephanie Parsons will tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, August 18th, 2026. So this month, or this week, actually, what is it? Dunkin' and Panera rolling out their fall menus. So, you know, autumn is coming because we're starting to get the fall menus. And you know what that means. Translation, pumpkin spice everything is coming. And not only that, I saw this on the Newswire this morning. Hershey rolling out its Halloween candy this week. Including its incredibly popular Halloween pumpkins, the Hershey Reese's Halloween pumpkins. You'll recall that last year, the company survived a lawsuit that claimed ads for the Halloween pumpkin candies were deceptive because the smiling pumpkin design on the wrapper was not on the actual candies. And a judge tossed the lawsuit, arguing that people could still enjoy the Halloween pumpkins, even if they felt tricked by the wrappers. It did not substantively reduce the enjoyment of the treat. In a press event to announce their fall lineup, Hershey's senior brand manager for Halloween said the pumpkin is the cornerstone of our portfolio. Hershey, they say, will produce 26 million Reese's peanut butter pumpkins for this Halloween season. So, just mention that those are coming, so we get excited about that. One of the things that we love about fall. What else is going on? Among the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, the first things you need to know. Every day, there's got to be something that we're worried about. Some doom and gloom, we're all going to die type stories. And here is today's doom and gloom item. A major new study shows that drinking just one soda or other sugar-sweetened beverage, just one a day, more than doubles the risk of stomach cancer. That is compared to people who don't consume beverages, soft drinks, or juice with added sugar, energy drinks, those kinds of things. Researchers at Mass General Brigham Cancer Center have published their findings after analyzing data from 100,000 study participants over several decades. So this was no small study. This was pretty comprehensive. And they find that artificially sweetened drinks showed no such risk. Scientists say these findings are important because according to the data, more than 60% of U.S. adults between the ages of 18 to 65 report drinking at least one sugar-sweetened beverage a day. And it could double, more than double, your risk of stomach cancer. So, you're welcome. Now you know that's what we're worried about. That's what we're fearful of. That's what we're wringing our hands over. That is our doom and gloom. We're all going to die study because we're drinking just one soft drink or sugar-sweetened beverage a day. You have to decide for yourself whether it's worth it, I guess. Hey, this is actually important. This is significant. You've been following the story, very sad story, of the bald eagles at Big Bear Lake. Shadow and Jackie and the whole saga about Jackie being ill and unfortunately passing away. And apparently Shadow has started the process of finding a new mate. Which everybody is buzzing about who's been paying attention to the bald eagles in Big Bear in California. But I bring it up because the Ojai Raptor Center, that cared for Jackie and tried to nurse her back to health, unsuccessfully, unfortunately, but they were caring for Jackie. They are warning now of potential scams following the bald eagle's death. Several online postings for merchandise featuring Jackie, image of Jackie the bald eagle, are claiming, these online sellers are claiming that the proceeds will benefit the Wildlife Rehab Center, the Ojai Raptor Center. But the staff there says that they have not collaborated with anyone to produce merchandise, and they are not interested in sharing the proceeds. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that every online seller of Jackie-themed merchandise or bald eagle-themed merchandise is a scam. Independently, these companies that are doing this may have every intention of donating proceeds or a portion of the proceeds to the Ojai Raptor Center. And I doubt that they would turn away those donations. But if they are billed as official merchandise or somehow licensed merchandise, or if they claim some sort of partnership with the Ojai Raptor Center, that is not the case. Now, they do say that they sell official Ojai Raptor Center merchandise, but not anything featuring individual animals or individual patients, as they refer to them. The Specialized Veterinary Center says only Friends of Big Bear Valley, the nonprofit organization that advocated for Jackie and other bald eagles in the area, they were the only ones to actually approach the center about a merchandise collaboration. And the officials with the Raptor Center say they support the Friends of the Big Bear Valley, but do not want any of the proceeds from their merchandise either. So, I don't know, maybe they would turn down a donation knowing that that's where it came from. I don't know why they would do that, but the long and short of it is, if you are seeing these offers online, these merchandise, this merch that's being sold online, that they claim benefits the Raptor Center and all of that, not the case. So just to put that out there, I think that's rather important. A couple of other items here. Among the first things, it's, you know, whenever some sad event takes place, there'll always be scammers or individuals looking to cash in. That appears to be the case in this situation. A couple of other items here. Among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. It is a midterm election year. More primaries happening today. What in Florida? The big one. Also Alaska. And is it Wyoming is the other state that's voting today? Anyway, midterm election year, but one of America's major political parties already looking ahead to the 2028 presidential election. The Democratic National Committee has selected South Carolina to lead its presidential primaries here in a couple of years. The party approved a list of six states to lead its early presidential contests after holding discussions at a meeting over the weekend. South Carolina will be the first primary on January 22nd, 2028. That'll be followed by South Carolina, will be followed by Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Michigan, and Virginia, all in February. The new roadmap to the nomination for the Democrats is designed to put minority voices front and center for choosing the next national leader. Although many political analysts expect those traditional early states like Iowa and New Hampshire is still among the top five, but New Hampshire is usually first. So they can't be happy about being pushed to, third? And Iowa left off the early list entirely. And a lot of analysts are expecting those states to fight this change, whether they have any standing to do that. I mean, it's pretty much the party gets to decide these things, but Iowa and New Hampshire, not going to be happy about that. Kind of interesting. And we'll see how it all plays out. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. We're coming up on football season. NFL preseason is underway. So the first game's just a few weeks away. And the value of NFL franchises continues to surge. Sportico reporting that the average NFL team is now worth $9.34 billion. More than $9 billion. That is an increase of more than 31% from just last year. I mean, that's pretty good investment. If you've got $9.34 billion lying around, you can get a pretty good, pretty solid return on your investment. 31% increase year over year. It is the largest one-year increase in at least a decade. The Dallas Cowboys are the most valuable NFL franchise, probably not a surprise, $15.5 billion in value, followed by the LA Rams, the New York Giants, the New England Patriots, and the New York Jets. At the very bottom of the list, the least valuable NFL franchise, the Cincinnati Bengals, at $7.4 billion. So even that is still more than all but six teams in the world outside the NFL. So even the lowest valued NFL franchise is worth more than every sporting organization in every sport globally, save for six teams. That ain't too bad. It just kind of gives you an idea of the power of the NFL. Crazy stuff. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
Keep WFIN at your fingertips and download our updated mobile app for iPhone and Android. Plus, enable Alexa by searching for WFIN under skills and then just say, Alexa, play 1330 WFIN. Grab it all at WFIN.com.
Findlay City Council met last night instead of their usual Tuesday meeting date, and data centers and housing issues continue to be on the minds of city leaders. Findlay Mayor Christina Mern is with us this morning to further discuss these hot-button community issues this morning. Before we get into that, I do want to bring this up because you were part of the press conference with the police department yesterday where the body cam video was released from last week's officer-involved shooting. I know this remains an open investigation as all of the details are sorted out regarding this, but what was your reaction to seeing the video and everything that transpired in that incident?
Yeah, obviously, anytime there's loss of life, it's just really sad. And, you know, our hearts go out to the family members and our Findlay Police Department team. It's difficult for them as well. It is an ongoing investigation as a standard procedure. BCI has been brought in to conduct that investigation. You know, I'm confident that our team is trained appropriately to handle these situations. And, you know, they tried to negotiate with Mr. Smith for, I think, 49 minutes and told him to put the weapon down about 92 times. You know, there was other individuals in the area that we were concerned for their safety. And so I'm not going to comment on the results of the investigation as that is ongoing. But I know that our team is equipped to handle these situations, even if the outcomes are unfortunate.
Shifting to the topics at hand, you faced some pretty sharp criticism last week for a private meeting that you had arranged regarding the data center zoning issue that is before council and before the Zoning and Planning Committee, where you had arranged this meeting with officials in New Albany on this topic. That was later scrapped because of the pushback from this being a private meeting. What was to be the purpose of this? What did you hope would come out of this?
Yeah, so it was just going to be an educational session. So, you know, a lot of, this is new technology. There's a lot of questions. We wanted to understand how it's worked well, issues that the other communities have had. And New Albany has served as a kind of resource for other communities across the state. And I'd heard good information about kind of what they were able to share. And so at the request of council members, as they're trying to get educated, had reached out to them to put together this meeting, you know, and the intent was it for it to be an educational session. And, you know, I think that there's some benefit to council members being able to ask questions in private at times, because there may be things that they feel silly asking, right? But we just don't know. There's so many things that are unknown about this technology. So had organized that, was certainly not, you know, trying to be shady by any means. But I understand all of the concern that was raised. And so we're going to make it a public meeting. I don't know if it will be the same folks presenting, or if we're just going to try to find some other resources to come in and do more education. But, you know, there was no ill intent. I continue to believe that council does have the opportunity to have private educational meetings, as is the opinion of our law director, as is the opinion of multiple other law directors that we consulted. So we were not doing anything illegal, but I understand the public sentiment in feeling like everything about this needs to be public. And so that's the way we're going
to
go.
And I think that really boils down to the concerns that so much of this seems like it is happening behind closed doors, when that may or may not necessarily be the case. But to be clear, do you support data centers? Do you want to see this kind of development here? Because there's an awful lot of sentiment in the community that we just don't want this here.
Well, first and foremost, Chris, I push back against the comment that so much of this is going on behind closed doors. Nothing except for that meeting has been behind closed doors. We have had multiple public meetings through our planning and zoning committee. We've talked about this at council. We just started the discussions at City Planning Commission. And all future discussions about the zoning code and how our community needs to handle it will all have to be public discussion, with multiple opportunities for public feedback. We also have a website that people can provide comment. It has the full language of our current proposals, as well as frequently asked questions and an ongoing kind of response and answer to the questions that people provide. So there's nothing going on behind closed doors. The fact of the matter is that a private business kind of sprung on us that they were looking at putting a data center out in Allen Township. But until that was made public, we had no knowledge of that either. So I think that people need to understand that just because something is now being talked about publicly doesn't mean that the city was aware of it in advance. So that's first things first. On my personal position, I don't know. I think that they can be beneficial and are going to be a necessary part of our lives moving forward, but I think that they need to be done in a very strict manner. We can't just blanket say no, but I also completely agree with the concerns. I don't want something detrimental to neighbors. I don't want something that's going to cause environmental issues. I'm a big believer in being good stewards of our environment, and that, you know, we need to protect our farmland as much as possible. But I also understand private property rights and all of those nuances. And so, you know, this is a new issue that I never saw coming, you know, when I have become mayor, but now I have the responsibility of making sure that it's done right for our community. And so that is why I have kind of tried to take as much information that I've learned from other communities that have been dealing with this far longer than us, and have tried to put together recommendations to council on our legislation that is both gives us as much flexibility to be strict. We're not creating flexibility so that we can be willy-nilly. We are putting in all of this flexibility because that allows us to put a ton more restrictions on these and evaluate them case by case, rather than just setting a standard that if a company meets, then we can't say no if they can legally meet it. So that's why we have taken the approach of conditional use. all of the reviews that would go along with that, the ability to hold businesses accountable if they aren't meeting those parameters, and being able to look at it, you know, on that case by case basis. I think that that is the best moving forward, especially when we're seeing how quickly the technology is evolving. Mm-hmm. I don't want to pass something, you know, in the next 6 months, that then in 2 more months, oh, the technology has changed so much that now we need to update our code again. So that's why we're really taking the approach that I think is really thoughtful, gives us the most structure, but also the most ability to evaluate and be strict to make sure that it's something, if we even want it, a part of to work in our community. Mm-hmm. And I think the reality is that we have to be able to evaluate them. But I don't have strong opinions one way or another.
With respect to that, at the previous city council meeting, council was presented with the initial draft of those zoning recommendations. Obviously, that was referred back to committee then, and we'll go through further revisions and so on and refinements. Mm-hmm. But based on what you have seen thus far, do you feel as though zoning and planning has a good start on that? Are you happy with what's come out of that thus far?
Yes. I do think that we're in a really good spot, and we've, you know, had a variety of people look at it to say, yeah, you're restricting the right things. You've given yourself the ability to say yes, to say no, to put those restrictions on it. It is probably the most strict part of our code that we have ever had. I know Matt Cordonier has said that in his tenure, this is the most strict code that we have ever built out, allowing us to have independent third-party consultants or professionals review the water use, the electric use, all those different things at the developer's cost as well. So I think that we have really built a strong code.
At last night's council meeting, this was, I think, second reading, so it's not been approved yet, but the ordinance came up regarding a community reinvestment area agreement for the Vision Company's redevelopment of the Shady Grove property into multifamily housing. Explain what that is and why that is important, because I think there is a lot of confusion or misunderstanding regarding what that specifically is. What is a community reinvestment area agreement?
Yeah, so the community reinvestment area is a property tax abatement. And what that means is that, you know, the current property taxes will continue to be paid, but then the improved value will only be only 75% of it will be paid for a period of time. And that, so the schools, all the different entities will get a 25% of the value, new value will be captured in property taxes. So they are going to see a pretty significant increase in taxes. I think the numbers that I had previously looked at, that parcel currently generates about $7,000 a year in property taxes, and it will increase to over $100,000. In property taxes, even during the abatement period. But property tax abatements are very standard practice across the state and really across the country to help developments be able to pencil out. You know, where we've seen huge cost increases in construction materials, and so being able to build a product that is what we want in the community, you know, takes partnering together to help them their project pencil out to be able to get the required financing. And then that once that period rolls off, then the full valuation of the property will be captured. So it is not taking money from the schools. It is delaying the benefit that to all the taxing entities. But I think what's also important is that this is being developed in the school district for Van Buren, where they do also have an income tax. So any folks that are living in those properties will be paying an income tax. So we project that there will be significant additional income tax revenue to the schools as well. And then obviously, once that abatement rolls off, there'll be significant additional increase in property tax revenue. But I think this is something that we had discussed with council prior to kind of all of the other, the zoning and the site plan review, all of that. So I don't think that this is a surprise to anyone. I know that there is a lot of discussion going on property taxes in the state and concerns about abatements. And I think that this new structure with the post 94 gives us more flexibility to evaluate, again, each project. But I do believe that this is a project that will be beneficial long term, a good housing product, and will provide benefit to the schools with what we expect to be pretty minimal students being added. The company has talked to the schools and evaluated and knows how many students, school age students they typically have living in the buildings.
We will leave it there for now, but again, we'll continue to follow all of these developments and these issues as they continue to be discussed widely in the community, as we know. Again, Findlay Mayor Christina Mern, thanks very much for taking the time. As always, we appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Great to see you.
Now, the Good Mornings Community and Business Spotlight.
Taylor Place Assisted Living is in the spotlight this morning, and we are speaking with Leah Benton, Taylor Place Director of Health and Wellness. And I read a statistic the other day that nearly 1 in 5 Americans are age 65 plus. Our population is aging, people are living longer. That's a great thing, but it also presents some real-world challenges. Talk about the importance of health care and long-term care as our population ages.
So as our population ages, the inevitable happens. You get more complex health issues. Your chances of falling go up. A lot of people suffer from some form of isolation because they're not getting out and about in the community the way they used to. They're relying on friends and family to get to doctor's appointments, to get to the grocery store, things like that. So assisted living helps mitigate all those risks, gets them in a community with social interaction, frequent access to doctors, 24-hour nursing, and on-site care staff.
So first of all, let's talk about how assisted living contributes to safety for seniors in particular.
Yep. So when it comes to safety, just having that community, you're around caregivers that learn your routines. So they're quick to notice if something's off. You've got someone there to help you manage your medications. A lot of seniors forget to take a medication or take medications incorrectly. So with assisted living, you have that 24-hour on-site nursing and caregivers around the clock. So they make sure you get your things when you need them. And you've got meal service 3 times a day. You're getting those home-cooked meals versus, you know, a lot of people when they're living at home, if you ask them how they're eating, they might heat something up small for lunch and they might eat dinner.
Mm-hmm. And not only do you have that round-the-clock care available as professional care. I mean, family caregivers are great, but they don't always necessarily know all of the ins and outs, what to watch for, the medication indications, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. We have 24-hour nursing service, so they're never alone. We also have access to other modalities, so physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, mental health therapy, and we also have access to a nurse practitioner around the clock.
So let's turn this around a little bit. What makes a senior successful in an assisted living environment? Because it's like anything, you get out of it what you put into it.
Exactly. So I could say a lot of things, but really at Taylor Place, you just have to be willing to show up. We kind of take care of the rest of it. You know, a lot of people come to us and they're uncertain, but what they find is a sense of community. You know, they're busy with activities, they're making new friends, they're getting 3 meals a day, their housekeeping's taken care of for them. I like to think of it as a vacation, really. You know, you got round-the-clock maid service, someone to bring you your meals or take you to them. Plenty of activities to do, so you're never bored. And it's not so much about living and being alive, it's about thriving.
A very important distinction. How can someone learn more about Taylor Place Assisted Living?
Absolutely. You can find us on Facebook if you just search Taylor Place, or you can give us a call at 419-420-0790. Or you can feel free to stop in and see us anytime. We're located at 1920 Breckenridge Road, right here in Findlay.
Again, Leah Benton is Director of Health and Wellness at Taylor Place Assisted Living in the spotlight this morning. Leah, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
The Community and Business Spotlight is a promotional advertisement paid for by the featured sponsor.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
In the news business, there are two separate and distinct groups: breaking news and the news that is already broken. These are their stories.
An Oregon man is suing a business and its owner after he was shot multiple times during an attempted burglary. Now that's bold. That's bold. Kenneth Voiles broke into the Touchstone Granite and Marble Company through a damaged garage door, originally claiming he was just seeking shelter, but he later admitted that he intended to rob the place. Owner James Grant discovered Mr. Voiles trespassing and allegedly shot him repeatedly, including at least once at close range. Mr. Voiles survived and crawled out of the business, but he is now suing because he was shot. Mr. Grant says that he fired on Mr. Voiles after he became aggressive and threatened him with the bolt cutters that he had used to illegally enter the building. And Mr. Voiles is now seeking $10 million in compensatory and punitive damages because he was shot when he was breaking in to rob the place. So apparently he's still trying to rob the place, just in a different form. But that's bold. Man, okay. Elsewhere in the broken news, a landlord in Milwaukee stumbled upon a stolen Picasso print while cleaning out a vacant apartment. This is a crazy story. Tim Dirtz found the artwork tucked behind a bedroom door after evicting a tenant. You would think the tenant couldn't pay his rent. Maybe you should have sold the Picasso that he had in the apartment. But there's more to the story. Mr. Dirtz said it was in a back bedroom behind a door. Very odd placement for such a an impressive piece of art. And here's why. An antique dealer friend of his identified the print as the Picasso that was reported stolen from a local gallery back in 2018. The owner of the gallery confirmed it was his missing Torero print, one of only 30 signed copies known to exist. And he said he was overwhelmed to learn that it had been discovered. It's appraised between $35,000 and $50,000, or at least it was when it was stolen. For now, the print remains in police custody while an insurance matter is resolved. So whether he'll actually get it back or not remains to be seen. But wow. If you go through the trouble of stealing a $35,000 print and then you just sit on it in your apartment, end up getting evicted. That's crazy. And presumably now we have a name of somebody who might have stolen it. And finally, speaking of crazy treasures, treasures being discovered in crazy places, a sewer installation project in Belgium has unearthed a stunning $10 million gold discovery. Workers drilling to install new sewer pipes found 49 gold bars and a bucket of coins sealed inside the walls of a cellar in an old brewery building. Crews initially mistook the hoard for just ordinary coins, but authorities have now secured the gold in a high-security vault while prosecutors investigate its origins and legal ownership. Here's the thing, though. Under Belgian law, if no rightful owner claims the gold within 5 years and no criminal links are found, the find will be split between the workers and the property owner. Which, that's kind of cool. The workers who found it will get a share. And the local property owner turns out to be a local charity. The organization says it hopes to use any proceeds to expand homeless shelter capacity in the area. That's pretty cool. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Findlay Trojans play here on WFIN. This is Tim Montgomery. Join me and Coach Cliff Hyde for all the action of Trojan football. You'll get every exciting play each Friday night, all season long, home and away.
This is Coach Stephen Adams. The Trojans open the season at home Friday night with Medina.
The Trojans play here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Here is something to take to heart, especially because it's going to be a pretty nice day today. New survey of 2,000 workers finds that 56% of us never step outside during a typical office workday. Even if we're working remotely from home, we never bother to step outside during the workday. Additionally, 85% of us say we skip lunch breaks altogether on occasion. Now, you put those two things together, 78% in the survey said they would prefer eating outdoors most workdays. And happiness ratings jump from 51% to 66% after eating lunch outside. Nearly half, 47%, say that they would be more productive with regular outdoor breaks. So, let's take that to heart today. Take some time, get outside, put down your phone, close your laptop, and get outside, have lunch outdoors. You're going to benefit from it. Time to find out what's happening at the Findlay Family YMCA. Sports director Quinn Gable is with us now, and I would imagine for you with that title, now's busy time of the year.
Yeah, Chris, it certainly is. We just wrapped up a really good baseball season for us. We had about 330 kids that participated in summer T-ball, and Coach Pitch was with us this summer. So now that the kids are back in school, it's full steam ahead for us. We've got a lot getting ready to come up.
So what is happening as we come up on the fall? What's going on?
Yeah, so right now we just finished up registration for fall soccer. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited to have over 400 kids from around the area participating in our fall soccer league, which will begin here at the end of August. So we've got that to look forward to. But we also have fall basketball that's getting ready to start as well. We have registration open for that right now through the YMCA from now until October 7th. That league, it goes all the way from pre-K, preschoolers, all the way up to sixth grade. So everybody gets to have a piece of that and be a part of that. So we're really excited for that. We've got, like I said, registration for that will close in October, and we'll start at the end of October with that league. We've also got flag football registration, which closes up at the end of this week. We've got indoor soccer. So like I said, we've got a plethora of programs and activities for the kids this year.
So for those sports where the registration is still open, how do families do that?
So they can either visit us at the downtown YMCA or the East Branch YMCA, and they can register in person with the front desk. They can also visit our website. It's findlayymca.org. They can register online there. Registration, we receive all the same information, and sometimes it's easier. So they have two options, either in person or online.
And as we've mentioned before, don't have to be a Y member in order to sign up for these sports programs, right?
Absolutely not. It's open to anybody that wants to be a part of it. If you're not currently a member, but you're interested in becoming a member, you can also reach out to our front desk and our membership director there. She can answer those questions. But our programs, we want everyone to be a part of it. So it's open to everyone.
So definitely we'll be busy. How do you coordinate all of that? I mean, that's a lot of sports going on all at once.
Yeah, it's a lot of deep breaths, a lot of coffee to stay awake, but no, we have incredible volunteer coaches and parents that make my job 10 times easier. Whenever we do our coaches meetings, we have so many people that are a part of those, and we have coaches that return year after year, and they're already in the routine of everything. So like I said, it sounds like it is a lot to actually to coordinate, but thankfully with some great parent involvement, it's a lot easier and a lot
Yeah,
a lot more simple.
I guess we really should put a shout out to all of the volunteers who help make that happen, because without the volunteer coaches, without the folks who actually make it go smoothly on a day-to-day basis, you know, on the ground, you know, it just wouldn't happen. You need an awful lot of folks to step up and help make it a positive experience for the kids.
Absolutely. It's a great opportunity for those that are wanting to get involved. We try and keep our teams manageable. We want to make it as easy on the coaches as possible. But it's such a joyful and I think a rejuvenating experience to not only be able to coach your own kid in a sport, but to be able to play a role in coaching some of our other players as well.
While we are on the subject of things going on involving sports and activities, getting the kids involved and so on, there's still some time with the pool. You've got a big end of summer pool party coming up at the end of the month. Got a couple of other things that are going on swim related. So that's not necessarily over just yet.
Not at all. Like I said, this is the time of the year. Everything's getting started and it's just starting to pick back up. We've just recently wrapped up a really good summer swim team season. So looking forward to the fall. We've got a swim team that'll be having registration open for those. So feel free to also reach out to the front desk, reach out to the YMCA if you have any questions about that. That's a great opportunity. Our swim team has had a lot of success, especially recently. The Finley Frogs, they've been doing incredible. So we've got swim getting ready to open up. Riverside Pool is still open. Just on some limited hours throughout the rest of the summer, but we are very excited. It's been a great season for Riverside, so we're hopefully looking forward to some good weather to end this pool season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned the end of summer pool party. I was looking at the website, that coming up on the 28th. That's for members of the Y, but you also have a dads and kids swim party on the 30th that is for everyone over at Riverside.
So. Yes, absolutely. Some pretty exciting events to end out our pool season. The dad swim event is a pretty awesome opportunity. We've done it before, and it's always a great event. The end of summer pool party, weather holding. We've been getting a lot of rain recently, but as long as the sun is shining, and we'll be out there, and we'll hopefully, like I said, be able to end this season on a good note.
So, again, for all of the signups that are still going on, that would include flag football. And what else is going? You're still signing people up?
We've got flag football open right now for the preschoolers up to second grade. We've got registration open throughout the end of the week. So, like I said, we've got that going on. We've also got indoor soccer registration, which won't happen until November, but we've got registration for that open as well. And then fall basketball registration is open through October 7th. And like I said, they can visit us at the YMCA at the front desk, or they can go to FinleyYMCA.org and register there.
All right. All kinds of great stuff going on. And again, for the entire community, all of those sports programs and sports director, Quinn Gable from the Finley Family YMCA, with us. And by the way, you know, again, we talk about organized sports and all of that, but for those who just want, you know, to go and play, you know, that's one of the great things about the Y facilities. You've got the facilities for you want to go and pick up game of basketball or what have you. You can do that there at the Y. So.
Yes, it's a great opportunity. We have such an incredible facility, especially compared to other YMCAs in our areas. I mean, we have two full-size gymnasiums that we can use. We also work in conjunction with a lot of local schools in our area to be able to use their gymnasiums or use their facilities to host games and practices. Emory Adams Park is where all of our soccer and flag football games are held, so we've been using that for several years now. It's a great facility for us to be able to use. We can fit upwards of 30 soccer fields out there on top of our flag football field. So thankfully we've got a great building over on East Lincoln Street and our East Branch. But like I said, we've got some great community partners as well that make it all possible.
So I just mention it because we're getting into that time of the year where, you know, the weather turns colder and you think we're going to be locked inside. But don't let that stop you from staying active, because this is something we want to do year round. So
absolutely. It might be cold outside, but it's always warm at the YMCA.
Sports Director Quinn Gable with us once again. Quinn, thanks very much for the update. We've got a link on our webpage, goodmornings.net, if you want more information. And Quinn, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. And if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would also appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform. That will help others discover the show as well, and we thank you very much for your assistance with that. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.